Welcome to Fourth Stream Radio, where we consider concepts to help on your quest to a satisfied mind. And today, Dave and I are talking about one of the oldest books of the Bible, the book of Job.
Yeah, and the reason that we know that, because Job is very unique. It was obviously preserved by the Hebrews, but there are some remarkable things about Job. The first of which is there are no developed Hebrew references.
Okay, and let me interrupt just a second. Job is a book that I feel like I understand maybe the overarching concept, but I just know I'm missing so much. I get lost in the long ramblings of the friends.
Yeah, which is kind of what life is like.
So depending on how our conversation goes, I may have things to say or I may just have a bunch of questions.
Well, that's okay. There are no developed Hebrew references. What that means is that, you know, there's no reference to the priesthood. Even the names for God and the words that are used there, they're just not developed like you would find in Moses. So that's how we know it. Probably the book was probably written around the time of Abraham, either right during or before or a little after.
Because there were sacrifices, right?
Right. But sacrifices happened in the garden.
That's true.
Yeah. So the first sacrifice when Adam and Eve were covered with skins. In fact, the reality of that is that Jesus, the Son, was slain before the foundations of the world because God lives outside of time.
Gosh, the stuff that I know conceptually but still haven't put together just blows me away sometimes.
Another great part of understanding the heart of suffering and having a faith heart, which is what you learn through Job, is that it gives us insight into the relationship between man and angels and God.
Where are the angels?
Where are they?
In Job.
Well, Satan's there at the beginning.
You know, yep. Oh, like, yeah.
Yeah. He's like one of the archangels.
And all the angels show up in front of God.
Or some people call archangels. But, you know, yeah, exactly. And that's interesting. I mean, it lays out some theology there. I ponder this because I think about, obviously, angels live in different dimensions. Mm-hmm. And mathematically, many different dimensions have been demonstrated with mathematical equations. So I perceive and think that there are concurrent dimensions that are existing.
Like one circle outside another circle.
But apparently angels are able to go between dimensions. So that's interesting. So the relationship between man and angels and God, that's, I don't know, it's just a mind blower as well.
Mm-hmm.
Also from the book of Job, what I enjoy is the scope of his suffering and loss.
And his loss seems unbearable. Literally, you know, when you think through and you think, okay, he had boils. Yeah, but that's not all he had. He'd lost all his children and all his servants, people who were probably friends and companions of his. I mean, it just sort of goes on. It's not like just one thing. I don't know how did he bear it?
I absolutely don't know. I had a carbuncle once, which was, it's three boils together, and they were on my face. This happened to me about 4 or 5 years ago, and I'd lay there. You know, remember?
Oh yeah,
the pain I was in, and that was just one spot on my body. So I try to imagine what he was going through, and you know, as I think about that too, you know, sometimes Job's wife gets a bad rap, but you know, everything Job lost except for his health, she lost.
She did too. Think how lonely she had to be in all of it. She lost him in a lot of ways too, in terms of, you know, when two people are grieving, they are not the same toward each other that they need each other to be. It's just the fact about grieving.
So that's one of the interesting things about Job, is that the scope of the suffering and loss is huge, but also the scope of the restoration. And those things stand side by side if you want to understand the richness of story and understand the character of God, because restoration and redemption are a big part of who God is, and it's not like you can't take away, and you can't take it away for the Father either. His Son was sacrificed. He was separated from somebody he had been with eternally. So that sacrifice was made, and that is an eternal sacrifice. That's why when Jesus shows up in heaven, he appears as a lamb, and he still has the marks, whatever that looks like.
I know it. Scarring.
Then you have the whole idea in Job about the unhelpful and inaccurate views of his friends, which you alluded to a little bit earlier. You know, they were really kind of putzes because they were so self-righteous. Mm-hmm. You know, here was their chance to put it to their friend Job and show why they were more righteous than him. And that had to be have its own kind of hell that he must have been experiencing.
And do you know how it is when you have friends that talk too much in the first place? I listen, I read these and I think, my gosh, they went on forever. Did they not look at him and see how much pain he was in to talk for so long? And then the other thing, you kind of go, how did he just not glaze over? And how did they not mourn with him for losing so many things? How did they... I don't know. They just missed it.
Well, they missed a basic connection. They did come and kept their mouth shut for a while, you know, and because they could tell that his pain was great. So it wasn't like they were totally awful friends, but they just didn't perform. I'm hoping if this ever happens to me, my friends do it. Hey, the way of suffering is in many ways alien to the 21st century believer. We've achieved high levels of personal comfort and developed buffers to isolate us from pain. The concept of suffering or choosing to suffer is almost unthinkable and in some ways repulsive in our advanced, in quotation marks, thinking.
And suffering really does get rid of all these rough, kind of ugly edges so that we can become more of a jewel. The thing that I think in our culture right now, too, is that even the definition of compassion for many seems more like, how can we leave each other alone and not stir the waters? That feels sort of like compassion, just being careful not to stir anything up. And really, compassion when someone is suffering is wading into those waters with them. You know, sometimes it means correcting a course, but sometimes it's just being willing to walk through it. And that is not comfortable.
Well, and quite frankly, Job, as righteous as he was, had never waded into those waters himself.
That's true.
And I mean, that was kind of the point of the book. At the end of it, he just basically said, hey, I heard about you, I had my perceptions about you, but I'm exchanging them because I understand something now that I did not understand before my suffering.
And isn't that the best part of the book when you get to that part? I love that.
It is.
And we'll get to it before we end also.
Hey, I want to bounce down a few references that relate to Job because there are many in the scriptures. If you never have read the story of Job, particularly those first few chapters and then the last three chapters, the friend stuff in between, that takes some consideration and you've got to kind of work your way through it. But look at it if you haven't had a chance to do that. What are the boundaries of suffering for somebody who follows Christ? This is out of 1 Corinthians 10. And I like this because it gives me hope. No temptation has overtaken you. And I think about Job when I read this. No temptation has overtaken you, but such as is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape also, so that you will be able to endure it.
Yeah, and isn't it funny when I'm in the middle of being tempted, I just think there is no way out. I feel like there's no way out because somewhere in there, I've let myself become totally involved with the sin. And I've discovered just in my life, I have to make a pre-decision to know that when I get to that point, there is a way of escape. I have to be willing to look for it.
Well, and the reality of focusing on, is God with me in the midst of my challenges? That is he there or has he abandoned me? Which is, you know, really easy to have you feel that way when you're in suffering. I know Job felt that way. You can tell that from his words.
Right.
This is cool too. This is out of John chapter 9. It's a situation where Jesus passes by the man blind from birth. And his followers, who, you know, understood the thinking of the day because they were taught well by their religious leaders, rabbi or teacher, they're addressing Jesus, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he should be born blind? This just kind of rings to my heart, right to the core of my heart. Jesus answered, it was neither that this man sinned nor his parents, but it was so that the works of God might be displayed in him. And this is a real key to understanding why Job suffered and why God has placed us into such a suffering environment.
Yeah, it really seems to be in our DNA to avoid suffering, but also to blame someone else when we do.
Absolutely. And that leads to the example of Jesus, too. And I ask the question, what can suffering do for us? And should we expect it? And if you look in Hebrews chapter 12, this is laid out in detail. I'm just looking at like one of the verses in there. It basically is telling us in the midst of our suffering to look at Jesus. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Now, I think about Job when I think about these verses because, you know, he was under it all the way down to where he had almost nothing left, to where his wife said, why don't you just curse God and die? But it says right here, get this, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin.
You know, we nearly lost a child, and we've had huge disappointments in our lives. We've had hard testings and heavy pressures to relieve us of our pride.
Yes.
Which is a nice way of saying making us broken people in a good way. But we've never suffered to the point of shedding blood. In fact, that's not even a standard I think of very often. I use other humans, not Jesus.
It's true.
I've suffered more than them.
It's all relative.
It is.
So another question I have is, what can be one of the chief outcomes of suffering? This is out of James 1. Blessed is the man who perseveres under trial. Now, that's straining against the load is basically what's being talked about there. For once he has been tested and approved, once he's gotten through it, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him. We talked about that a little bit at the beginning, the crown of life.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting concept.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting for Job, it was being able to say, I've heard all this stuff about you, God. I've heard it all, but now I see you.
My eyes see you.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow, what a way to end his experience. And then also to see him restored, but even in that restoration, that didn't mean the loss went away.
Right.
And that's one thing that's really easy to think, especially if you see somebody else suffering and as they work their way through it, sometimes it's easy to think, well, they're going to get beyond that loss. You know, you carry loss with you all of your life.
You do. You know, maybe God gave him sheep and camels and servants back, and he gave him more children. But, you know, more children do not replace ever the children you lost. Ask anybody who's lost a child.
Yes. A couple of other passages. Now, what we're doing here is we started with Job, and we're following through on some of the Job-like principles all the way through the scriptures. What should be our response to suffering? And this comes out of James chapter 1. Consider it all joy, my brothers, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. Now, this is Job. These verses have Job written all over them, and that's why he's there. And that's why it's the oldest, probably the oldest book in the scriptures outside of Genesis chapter 1 through 11. And let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, or mature and complete, lacking in nothing. And basically implied there is lacking in nothing that's truly important, which is what Job found through his suffering.
Mm-hmm. You know, the first time we went through some fairly traumatic stuff, suffering, we wanted to do anything to get away from it. But God always seemed to bring things to us that we couldn't just get away from. And this may sound like holier than thou type stuff, but as much as I still want to shy away from anything that brings suffering, I also realize that God honors it, which brings a certain type of reward, whether it's peace or satisfaction or maybe material exchange.
Well, here's a little comfort. After you've suffered for a little while, the God of all grace, who called you to his eternal glory in Christ, will himself perfect, confirm, strengthen, and establish you. And that you can take to the bank,
my
friend.
It's just worth it.
Forstream.com is a collection of resources to help you and those you know experience the freedom of a kingdom life. If you'd like to listen to today's program in its entirety, go to Forstream.com and click on the radio button.
I've enjoyed Job. Thank you. Today and together, we are finding hope at Forstream.com.